Om Agyanatimirandhasya Gyananjanashalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
Translation: I think that all my sisters must have gone to this great sacrificial ceremony with their husbands just to see their relatives. I also desire to decorate myself with the ornaments given to me by my father and go there with you to participate in that assembly. Purport: It is a woman's nature to want to decorate herself with ornaments and nice dresses and accompany her husband to social functions, meet friends and relatives, and enjoy life in that way. This propensity is not unusual, for woman is the basic principle of material enjoyment. Therefore, in Sanskrit, the word for woman is stri, which means one who expands the field of material enjoyment. In the material world, there is an attraction between woman and man, that is the arrangement of conditional life. A woman attracts a man, and in that way the scope of material activities involving house, wealth, children, and friendship increases, and thus instead of decreasing one's material demands, one becomes entangled in material enjoyment. Lord Shiva, however, is different, therefore his name is Shiva, which is not explained here, but Shiva means auspicious, as material enjoyment is inauspicious. He is not at all attracted by material enjoyment, although his wife, Sati, was the daughter of a very great leader and was given to him by the request of Brahma. Lord Shiva was reluctant, but Sati, as a woman, the daughter of a king, wanted enjoyment. She wanted to go to her father's house, just as her other sisters might have done, and meet them and enjoy social life. Here, she specifically indicated that she would decorate herself with the ornaments given by her father. She did not say that she would decorate herself with the ornaments given by her husband, because her husband was callous about all such matters. He did not know how to decorate his wife and take part in social life because he was always in ecstasy with thoughts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. According to the Vedic system, a daughter is given a sufficient dowry at the time of her marriage, and therefore Sati was also given a dowry by her father, and ornaments were included. It's illegal nowadays, isn't it? In India. It is also the custom that the husband gives some ornaments, but here it is particularly that mentioned that her husband, being materially almost nothing, could not do so. Therefore, she wanted to decorate herself with the ornaments given by her father. It was fortunate for Sati that Lord Shiva did not take the ornaments from his wife and spend them for ganja, because those who imitate Lord Shiva in smoking ganja exploit everything from household affairs. They take all of their wives' property and spend on smoking, intoxication, and similar other activities. Well, Daksha is not mentioned by name in this purport, but I was just thinking of that name this morning when I noticed that what does Daksha mean? Who can say? Expert, yeah. I was just noticing an example of inexpertise this morning. There are many of them, but I just happened to notice that the picture frame, I asked for the Maha Mantra in Bengali to be framed, but it's framed in, it's an irregular rectangle. It means it's straight at the top, comes down, but one side comes down more than the other, so it's sloping like that. So that's an example of inexpertise. Daksha means expert. Prabhupada translated that as, or he gave the purport of that as, he was expert in sexual affairs, in sex, to put it briefly. So Daksha is like, he's the villain of this story. He's the bad guy. But so when we think of Daksha, we might think, not very good. But Daksha in itself is a good quality. That's one of the qualities of Vaishnavas. Daksha is given as one of the qualities of Vaishnavas, to be expert. So a devotee should be expert in serving Krishna. It's like Prabhupada was expert. Even if he only produced all these books, that would have been a monumental contribution. But he did so many other things also. And the fact that he was able to produce these books while traveling around the world, and traveling around the world not sightseeing, but traveling around the world preaching Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada defines in one place the definition of expert as one who is able to do many things at the same time. So, he himself was the paragon of that, of expertise. So a devotee should be expert. It means it's not that we have to go and study everything, how to do everything, but whatever we do, we should try to do it as well as possible for Krishna. So I was noticing that this morning, picture frame was formed in an irregular rectangle. You know how to say that in Telugu? You translate it in Telugu? Oh, Telugu is there. This is Tamil, is it? Okay. You know how to say irregular rectangle? It's a technical term. You can say it. Okay, that's good. So I was thinking about that. I mean, that I'm a great exponent of Indian culture. I try to be. But when we're talking about Prabhupada wanted to spread Indian culture all over the world, he didn't mean this kind of culture. The kind of culture where people don't do things properly, which is very widespread in India. They don't bother. They just don't care. Or, you know, they throw their, just like yesterday I saw outside the bathroom, someone, they'd thrown their empty coconut oil bottle and some other things. You just throw the garbage anyway. So this is not the kind of Indian culture that we want to spread all over the world. I mean, there are some good things in Western culture also. People generally don't do that. Do they do that in Poland? They don't do that. Just throw garbage here and there. It depends where you are. If you go in a big city like London, where we have our temple in the center of the city, you come out after Mangalarti and all the streets are littered with people have been drinking all night and there's bottles strewn here and there. But if you go to a small country town, people, they don't do that. They don't do it. The habit of just throwing garbage here and there. I think it's come from the Indian culture, the village culture of, because everything was, disposable, or just like you eat from a plate, a leaf plate, and you throw it outside and the goat comes along and eats it. Or you're drinking from a clay cup and you just throw it down and then it merges into the earth. So, still, just like mango peels, you wouldn't throw it anywhere. It should be put in a, not just thrown anywhere in the field, but put in a compost. That's another word you're going to have a hard time. Put in a specific place so that it all rots together. I think that culture has come from that, though. Just like you throw the plate and then the goat comes and eats it, so it doesn't matter really where you throw it. The goat or the cow or whatever. But I'm pretty sure previously in India also, people, they must have, if they're making something, the carpenter, they'll do it nicely or whatever, the picture frame maker. Picture frame making is I suppose, a relatively new, and that would be done by a carpenter. There weren't so many pictures previously. Picture means you have to paint it. So there weren't many pictures. But they do a nice job. And not just because they get some remuneration for that. but because they take pride in doing a nice job. They take pleasure. I want to do it very nicely. They're just that you're. But nowadays, the idea is that, well, I'm just getting paid, so whether I do the job nicely or not, we get the same amount of money, so why bother to do it nicely? So, very dull-headed approach. No aestheticism. Just doesn't matter how the job's done. Even if I can get the money without doing the job, that's even better. Maybe they might think like that also. Just out-and-out cheating. So I was thinking that our devotees are coming, but we inherit the culture. We bring that cultural garbage with us. So it's like in the Western world, devotees there, because they're not so culturally attuned to Krishna consciousness, then they may be attracted. We were just discussing that yesterday. Some of our devotees are attracted to this horrible Western music. I mean, there is tasteful Western music also that we were discussing yesterday. Krishna Prem Prabhu from Italy has made many recordings of Krishna conscious songs with Western music, but it's tasteful music. But then when you get this style, there's a style of music in the West which is, it's actually evil. It people who have very low consciousness, they like to listen to that, and they listen to this music, I guess you can call it, and with the it infuses them to take intoxication and have sex. So why should our devotees be at all attracted to that? It's hellish music. It's liked by people who are attracted to hellish activities. It's a hellish consciousness music. So it may be, you know, there's some attraction to that. So they bring that with them, and they want to dovetail that in Krishna consciousness. But I don't think it's a good idea to dovetail that. Some things can be dovetailed, but some things it's better to just leave them behind altogether. So similarly in India, people, they have a better cultural background. They're more inclined to chant Hare Krishna in general than people in the West. They're more inclined to live the life of a sadhu. They're more inclined to respect Bhagavad Gita, to respect sadhus. So that's a cultural advantage. But then there are certain things that have to be overcome also. There are cultural disadvantages also, because if you throw garbage all over the site of Krishna's temple, then you're making an offense to Krishna. It's you don't think of it, you throw it out, but it's anti-Krishna conscious. And then people come and they see, they can understand. If the temple is very clean, then everyone feels, oh, this is a very nice atmosphere, and they appreciate that the people here are in good consciousness, and just the opposite also, everything is garbage everywhere. And they can understand that your consciousness is like that. Of course, when you're living on a building site, things will be higgledy-pig. You can imagine what that means and translate it. The sound of the word suggests what it means. It means everything is disordered. So, that's to be expected. But there's no need to exacerbate the situation by throwing garbage here and there. So I was just thinking about this daksha, how a devotee should be expert. That's why the page goes with the wind. Huh? Devotee should be expert in serving Krishna. And sati here, Srila Prabhupada has given the one side of womanly nature, prominent attachment to material enjoyment. But sati, the name is very good, materially or spiritually. If anything is good in this material, well, of course we say everything's bad, and from one perspective, one shouldn't see anything as good or bad. One should be detached from everything. But for a, sati means who is chaste. So for a woman to be chaste to her husband is good compared to not being chaste. In the spiritual sense also, devotee should be, Prabhupada sometimes uses the adjective chaste. Devotee should be chaste to Krishna. That means not running here and there to different demigods and just fixed in our Krishna consciousness, not trying for anything else, not indulging in anything else. So sati, that's also a term used in relationship with the gopis, because they're the most chaste to Krishna. Although they appear to be asati, they appear to be unchaste to their husbands, but they know that their husbands are not husbands, that Krishna is their actual husband. All right. So, it's all right. Here we've just read today one of those purports which probably needs annotations. In fact, if we want to explain Prabhupada's books in a way that won't offend the sensibilities of people in the modern age, then you have to write very big books, because practically every purport, it goes against the nature of this material world. And in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavatam's intention is stated, dharma projita kaitava atra. Herein all cheating religion is rejected. So everything in the world is cheating. What is that? Jato? Priti vite. Jato kichu. Dharma nama chale bhagavata kahe taha paripurna chale. Whatever's going on in this world, in the name of religion, it's all cheating. And you say, well, the Bhagavatam's also cheating. No, the Bhagavatam's not in this world. Whatever's going on, it's all cheating. And even from one perspective, we're talking about how it's good for a woman to be chaste, but that's also a kind of cheating. From the ultimate perspective, to think that this is my husband or this is my wife, that's also one kind of cheating from the ultimate perspective. But the devotee, while living in this world, has to see the condition of this world also. So the path of dharma, which is ultimately to be transcended and given up, for those who are on the platform beyond dharma, they think that dharma and adharma, they're not interested in all of these. Because they're on the platform of param dharma or satya dharma, the highest dharma, which is the only actual dharma, which is to surrender to Krishna. But within this world, there is dharma, which is to be followed, worldly dharma, which ultimately is, unless we understand that that dharma is only a platform to jump up to Krishna. If we take that dharma is all in all by itself, then we're cheating. We're cheating ourselves. So dharma is important. But it's important for the sake of bringing us to param dharma. And if we don't go to param dharma, then dharma swanushtita pungsa vishvaksena tatasriyaha no pade yad yadi ratim shama eva hi kevalam. Then it's not really dharma at all. It's just a burden. It's just hard work. It's misunderstanding of what dharma is meant for. Here, Srila Prabhupada is explaining the term stri. Do you have the word vistara in Tamil? Means to expand. So it comes from the same root. Stri is she who expands. Ato griha kshetra sutata vitaya janasya mohoyam ahammameti. Is also to be edited out of. If we want to be nice to everyone, then we shouldn't say this. But this is the actual fact. This janasya, ato griha kshetra. One has a wife, then he has to have a home, house, some property, land, children. Then comes the question of social life, in-laws. What is that? Akhyadasya. Swajana akhyadasya. Elsewhere the Bhagavatam states that these in-laws are actually outlaws. They're relatives. They're thieves in the name of relatives. Prabhupada gave the example of if a man is walking on the street and someone pulls out a gun and says, give me all your money, then he'll be shot and call the police. It's a crime. But he just walks home and goes home and the wife says, give me all the money. And he does. So it's the same thing. Only one's in-law and the other's outlaw. That's all. But it's the same. He worked and the wife takes the money. Swajana kirdasu. That's the language of the Bhagavatam. It's directly to this. Thieves in the name of relatives. So a woman, she expands. You need money. Griha kshetras. Sutapta, vitta. Vitta means wealth, money. By all these things, one is bewildered in thinking of terms of I, me, and mine. So this is what happens. And we've practically seen that. When a brahmachari gets married, who's living as a simple brahmachari with two sets of cloth, two sets of copian, toothbrush, toothpaste, and then all of a sudden he's got this, you know, wherever he goes, there's two huge suitcases full of saris. And he has to work hard to bring money because there are so many demands. The wife requires so many things. When you get married, you have to think, where is the home? Where is the place to live? And then all the necessities of life, TV, CD player, mixi, and bajaj, motorbike, what's in a scooter? They're not very popular here in North. I think because the roads are no good. Then all these things are required. And then all these things require money. So one becomes a slave. Money. Where is money? Where is money? Sometimes we recommend brahmacharis to get married because they're so careful. Bhalo manda kai hari pari chinta heen kobuna bhavi e deho charibo kono din. They're in such a carefree mood. I'm just going here, seeing this, and eating something and dressing, and they're not fixed on the point that we have to die at some point. They're not serious about spiritual life. They're just careful. I get my prasadam 2, 3, 4, as many times as I can a day. and do a little service, and sorry, it's better than working in the factory. I like singing, it's nice, some nice music. So maybe you go get married, because you don't like that the temple commander will come and say, hey, get to work. So then you have to change your temple commander. Change your DBC. GBC means gross bodily concept in the form of a, you can't translate that, in the form of a wife. That she will come and snap at you. Where's the money? Where's the money? I love you, I love you, I love you, but where's the money? This is reality. When one gets married, he signs a contract to become, to work hard all his life to get money, to support a gang of thieves. We know the story of, it's told like that, but this, who's that? It's said to be Valmiki, no? That he was a thief previously. But I think this is not in Valmiki Ramayana itself. It's probably from Tulsidasa, one of these versions. But anyway, Prabhupada told the story. That Narad came to him and said, why are you doing all this killing, thieving, dacoity? I'm doing it to support my family. Well, don't you know you have to go to hell for that? Well, maybe, but you know, at least you have to suffer sinful reactions. Or I have to support my family. So go ask your family members if they're prepared to share the sinful reactions. They'll share the loot. But they won't share this. You go and ask them. So he went and asked his wife and said, hey, I just found out today something. I've got sinful reactions to all this stealing I'm doing to maintain you. Will you share the result? The karmic result said, forget it. I don't mind how you bring the money, but, you know, if you do some sinful activity, it's your job to bring the money. So I'm not going to share in the reaction. I just spend it, that's all. So he asked his different family members. Then that's one story. Another story is this Nara told him to chant Ram, and he couldn't chant it, so he said, okay, chant Kill, Mara, 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 and then it changed into Rama, Rama, Rama. That's also not in Valmiki Ramayana. And actually, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he rejected that one. Sorry to say, because he said it's grammatically not correct in Sanskrit anyway. So anyway, you sign a contract to work hard all your life. Of course, in the modern world, people are not responding. That's why, again, dharma is needed, because they'll get married and it's like, you know, well, I'll try it out. And if it's no good, then, you know, I have a couple of kids, and if I don't like them, well, I can get divorced. Doesn't matter. That's the way people think in the modern age. Still in India, they don't think like that. But it'll come gradually. They're encouraging it. In the Western world, it's completely like that. And therefore, they have sometimes they make a marriage contract, a legal contract, before they marry. If we get divorced, to save all the hassle of having a divorce case, we'll just make a contract in advance that I get the fridge, you get the TV, and like this. So they're already decided, practically. Another thing is this alimony. Alimony means you get divorced and the man has to go on paying until the children are grown up. So it's encouraging divorce, and the woman thinks that, you know, the man's here, he's giving the money, but he has to give the money anyway, whether he's here or not. So why bother with him? I'll go, you know, I'll just divorce him, get a boyfriend, and, you know, have as many boyfriends as I like, and this guy has to keep on paying anyway. What do I need him for? I just need his money. So they're encouraging with this alimony, this divorce. So dharma is good, to maintain some kind of civilization and sanity in human society. In the West, there's this idea that, well, why shouldn't you just have sex? It's, why bother with all this marriage and all this? It's just natural. Sex is natural. Why not encourage it? This is Freud's idea. All the problems are coming because you're repressing these desires. Of course, that's human life. In Indian culture or spiritual culture, there is repression. The whole idea is to become free from material desires, so you don't indulge in it. It's like putting ghee into the fire. The fire is going to burn more and more. So you have to, that desire, of course, ultimately one has to transcend that desire or purify that desire. But in the beginning, and the beginning can last quite a long time, there has to be some repression. And that's not just in brahmachari life, but it's in human society. Just like you're not a human, you're a wild animal. If a man sees a woman and, oh, I have this natural desire, okay, just jump on her and rape her. It's not human to just live according to one's desires. A dog would do that. A dog sees a bitch in heat and just jumps on her. That's all. But a human, in any society, even the tribes in the jungle, they don't do that. In fact, Tejas Prabhu was telling me he was living with tribes in Andhra Pradesh. These are people, they're not allowed in the temples. Of course, it's after Gandhi's time. So. Previously, these people weren't allowed in the temples. They were considered too low. But the men and the women, they kept completely, they lived on the different side of the village from each other. The different residences. They didn't, that's more than in the caste society. I don't know if they lived, but they'd do their work separately, you know, they wouldn't mix with each other. That was the whole society in India, everyone. They didn't mix unnecessarily. Men, they had different things to do to women, and they'd do their job, and women would do theirs, and in the evening, some time together. That's all, not much. And that, also that even the men would socialize with men and women with women, they didn't spend much time together, actually. So this is considered unnatural. Well, in the modern liberal society, it's considered unnatural. It is unnatural if we consider that material life is natural, that material life is unnatural, and therefore these restrictions are there in human society, in actual human society, so that we can overcome our strong urges, which seem natural, but actually they're unnatural, so we can come to our true nature. And it's amazing that in the modern society where they consider themselves so advanced, but they're so stupid they can't understand this basic point. They're talking about, we don't want teenage pregnancies and all these unmarried girls, 14 years old, getting pregnant. And then they mix them up at school and the girls wear short skirts practically up to their vagina. And then they complain, rape, such rascals. They're not even human beings. Prabhupada spoke very strongly. Said they're not even human beings. But he wasn't just fanatically lashing out, or he wasn't just prejudiced against the West. Not like that. He was just speaking the. He explained why they're not human beings, because human life begins with atato brahma jignasa. This Vedic culture, people think, oh, it's very repressive, you see. You can't marry who, even if you want to get married, you can't marry who you like, you're just told you should get married to. It's very repressive, you can't fall in love and just marry the girl of your dreams. Well, that's the whole problem. It is a big dream. That married life is something very wonderful. it's a dream. The actual fact is that it's a lot of hard work and a lot of responsibility with, unless one is Krishna conscious, with very little actual payback. I mean, there's nothing you really get out of it. If one is not a devotee, then one has to get married so that one can have son, or at least one son, who can perform this, putrate kriyataya bharya, putra pinda prayojanam. One has to get married for the sake of having a son so that he can offer pinda, or the rice balls, to the pitris. So that's required. Unless one does that, one is sinful. Unless one is a devotee of Krishna, then he becomes free from all debts. Devarshi bhutapta viram pitrina. Nayamrini, what is that? Pitrinam? Nayamrini, something like that. You're not a rini. You're not indebted to all these different classes of people. If one is surrendered to Mukunda. So it's a duty, it's a responsibility. But this idea that one will enjoy, the woman spreads the net of illusion of enjoyment by dressing very nicely, speaking very sweet words sometimes. Cooking nice food. This is the dharma of a woman. She should do this to encourage a man to perform his duty. He should do this. In the higher level, of course, there are also most of the rishis, they're also married. But their wives were not expanding the field of material enjoyment. They were also, we find the wives were as renowned as their husbands. Who was that? There was one rishi, he had two wives, and then he said he wanted to go to the forest for self-realization, and are you interested? And only one of them came. You remember that? Who was that? One of them came with him, and the other said, I'm not interested in living in the forest. So I'm not interested in self-realization. So he left her behind, and he taught spiritual knowledge to his wife in the forest. That's one of the Upanishads. So it's not that every woman is materialistic. We find in history very well. It's not just then, but now also. We see in our Krishna conscious movement, there are some women who are very serious in practicing Krishna consciousness. And they're the real stri, or good stri. They expand the field of Krishna consciousness. They can actually help their husband. Many times we see that the wife is at least as, if not more, the Krishna conscious than the husband. She actually, many times the woman comes first to Krishna consciousness and is more serious about it. So, contrary to popular opinion, I'm not a woman hater, at least I hope not. Hate is not a symptom of a Vaishnava. There's no hatred. Such an emotion doesn't appear in a Vaishnava. But if we speak the fact according to Shastra, some people get very upset about this, that woman is she who expands the field of material enjoyment. That entangles a man. A woman wants to catch a man. A woman feels the need of a protector. In modern society in the West, they've given all facilities to live unprotected. So, just like Prabhupada used to say that dharma, artha, kama, people are interested in sense enjoyment, therefore they require money. Therefore, they're interested in religion. And Prabhupada was saying, that's just true at that time when Prabhupada was writing this, that nowadays people are getting money by some artificial means, so they're no longer interested in dharma. When they get money, they become uninterested in dharma. So a woman requires money and protection. She has that feeling. But nowadays the government does that in an impersonal way. So they feel, I don't need a husband. I can have children and the government will give me money. So I don't need a husband. But they're not happy. It's not just money, but there's a psychological need that women feel. And many men feel also that they I want to have a wife. Many times we hear some say that I need that kind of companionship. So there is an emotional need, but it's mine. The idea that I can be satisfied in any other way than by surrendering to Krishna is simply an illusion. And as much as a woman expands that illusion or a man expands that illusion, although the term stri is there for the female gender, which means that the woman is, generally the woman's form is more material, the consciousness of materialism is more strong, therefore the term is there, stri. There's a reason for that. It's not just that men and women are equal in all respects. The form of a woman is less conducive for self-realization. It's the generally the project of self-realization is a male enterprise. I mean, it's not that women are banned from that, but the concentration is there on the men. Shastra is taught in a systematic, prolonged way to men, not to all men. Only those of the Brahmana caste. Not caste, this word caste, what it means in the Brahmana Varna, there's a difference between what's called caste nowadays and what is the actual Brahmana Varna. Of course, in bhakti, these things don't matter at all, actually. It doesn't matter. Chandalopi dvija shreshta. Or is it Chandalopi dvija shreshta? Hari bhakti parayana. If one is born as a chandal, in a family of chandals, but he's attached to hari bhakti, then he's the best of the twice born. And hari bhakti vihinascha, chandalo pi dvijotama, even if one is supposedly the best of the Brahmins, but he doesn't have hari bhakti, then he is actually a chandala. That's the transcendental understanding of caste and material designations. All these things are designations, that's true. Man, woman, brahmana, chandala, these are all material designations. But Srila Prabhupada spends a lot of time, gives a lot of space in his purport to discussing these designations. And Krishna too, in Bhagavad Gita, he gives a lot of attention to the three modes of material nature. And then ultimately, mancha yogi habicharena bhakti yogena sevate sa gunan samatityaita brahmabhuyaya. One has to become trigunatit. This is a common term among transcendentalists, not among materialists. Because they don't want to be trigunatit. Trigunatit means to go beyond the three modes of material nature. So that's the ultimate aim, but to understand what are those three modes of nature and their influence, Krishna, a lot of the Bhagavad Gita is discussing the effects of the three modes of material nature, the symptoms of people infected by them. Because it's not such an easy thing. It's not just a matter of saying, well, you become a devotee and you transcend the modes of material nature. It doesn't happen just by, it's just like in Bengali, there's a saying that it's not just by putting on tilak you become a Vaishnava. So it's the same thing. It's you say, well, when you're a devotee, you're transcendental. So we don't have to bother about men, women. We're all transcendental, but we're not. It's not just by you know, someone comes up and says, "Oh, yeah, I want to be a devotee." Okay, and you're transcendental. It doesn't happen like that. And it appears that Prabhupada himself, in the beginning, he was more hopeful. In the beginning of his ministration to the Western world, he saw all these young people are coming and they're chanting Hare Krishna very enthusiastically and they're taking up Krishna consciousness very nicely. Then after some time, he saw that he would just get people married. He'd just call someone and say, "Hey, you marry this girl. No, nothing in advance. No discussion. You marry them. Okay, Prabhupada. All right, then tomorrow we'll have the ceremony." Prabhupada would do that in the beginning. He was confident that he didn't check any astrological chart or anything. He just saw that he's a devotee, she's a devotee, so come together, no problem. But then Prabhupada saw so many marriages are breaking up. So in the beginning he was enthusiastic for arranging marriages, but then after some time he refused to have anything to do with it. He said, "If you want to get married, you do so, you don't talk to me at all about it." He became completely disgusted. He used it, that word himself, to see how the devotees, they got married and then they were just live like, you know, forget their, you know, abandon their wife, abandon their husband. So after some time, Prabhupada started talking about varnashram dharma, the need for that. And then the question came up to Prabhupada, "Well, we don't need varnashram because we're devotees. Devotees are transcendental." And Prabhupada said, "You're not transcendental." The answer Prabhupada gave him, "Why are they falling down?" So Prabhupada said this, varnashram actually is for us to show others, but it's also for devotees. These considerations are necessary. If you think, "Well, I'm a devotee, so, you know, it doesn't matter. I'm transcendental, I can mix, I don't see any difference between male and female, it's all the same, so we just mix up with all the females," but don't be so bold. There's going to be trouble. Manu and Vyasadeva, both, in Bhagavatam and Manu Samhita, they both quote this verse, which it's another of those which needs annotations, this Matri. What is that? Matri Sasra Duhitra Va Navivittasino Bhavit Balavan Indriya Gramo Vidvansan Karshati. That one should not sit next to one's, one should not sit on the same seat or sit close to one's wife, sorry, not one, one's wife you can do, one's mother, sister or daughter, because the senses are so strong that even a learned person, even one who knows this is Maya, may feel some attraction. So, that's the nature of Maya. It's very strong. You should never underestimate Maya, or never think, "I have conquered Maya." One of my godbrothers, he declared publicly, "I have conquered Maya." Very foolishly. When I heard that, I thought, well, either he's actually made it, or he's in for a heavy fall. And guess what happened? He had a heavy fall. Because he thought, we cannot conquer Maya. We can take shelter of Krishna. Maya is much stronger than us. Daivihi esha gunamahi mamamaya duratyaya. Not such an easy thing, I will declare. Ladies and gentlemen, I have conquered Maya. Not such an easy thing. Now I am free from all material desires. But mameva ye papadyante mayametam tarantite. By taking shelter of Krishna, we can conquer Maya. And then, unless and until we get to that point, we should be very careful. And in how we interact with the material energy, which is very powerful. We see that Srila Prabhupada in the early days of the movement, his servant was a woman, actually. Devoted, of course. Govinda Dasi. But then later on, we find that Prabhupada, Now you're saying, in the beginning, he was very open, very free. Prabhupada, there was no question, there was no any sign of any mundane attraction or any such thing. But then later on, Prabhupada surrounded himself all the time by males, sannyasis. And even when his sister came to see him, Prabhupada was almost 80 years old and she must have been little younger. So Prabhupada, he didn't want that his sister, old woman, pure devotee, should come and see him alone. He wanted to set the example of sannyas. Even though previously in America, in the early days, he hadn't introduced all these things. He was himself, he would be alone in the room with young disciple, female. So these things are required for us. And we also need to hear, we shouldn't be sentimental. We also need to hear, woman is she who expands the field of material enjoyment, so maga, as Shankaracharya says, don't be attracted. What is that? Nari stanabharam. The woman's breast looks very heavy and attractive. Don't go. He said, don't be attracted to that. One, he says, Shankaracharya. No, this is right there in the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada. One breast represents envy and the other represents attachment. So don't be attracted to that. So we need to hear this. We shouldn't think that, it'd be so nice. I can get married and we'll have nice children and they'll all be pure devotees. If you're in brahmachari life, then know how fortunate you are. People come here and say, oh, you're living so austerely, no electricity. Well, you're living so austerely. So you can flip that switch and get a light that comes on. You have to work hard all day in activities which are not connected to Krishna. That's austere. But Maya thinks, oh, I can also be a devotee. I can also be happy like that. Well, maybe that's needed for you, for someone. Maybe you have to shift ground in the fight against Maya, Prabhupada said like that. If one thinks he's not strong enough to fight with the crocodile of Maya, he can do so. You don't have to be renounced, you can be a grihastha. But you should know there is a difference. It's not the same. Family life means you have to spend almost all your energy in matters which are not directly related to Krishna. And you become attached. Maybe the wife is a devotee, but the tendency is to become attached in a non-spiritual... She's a devotee, you're a devotee, okay, but the tendency is to become materially attached. So you should know that this, you can be a devotee in family life, but you're in a much better situation now. In Brahma, you're all brahmacharis. You're in a much better, so much better situation for aiming at going back to Godhead. You don't have anything else to do but to serve Krishna. You don't have any other engagement in all your 24 hours, 7 days a week, and even if you try to do something else, there's not much opportunity here. But if you try to do something else, then the other devotees will mercifully slap you back into the right path. That's a very good opportunity for becoming Krishna conscious. So if one feels that, well, not just you feel, but that should be discussed with others. What is your capability to remain in this path? The mind is too much disturbed. First of all, one should strenuously try to control it, but then, alright, we don't say anyone's bad or wrong, or or no one should ever get married, then you may do so. But know, you should know what you're getting into. Don't be in a big dream about it. It's like you find that someone spends a few years in the ashram as a brahmachari, then they get married, and then, only then do they develop full faith in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So what the Bhagavatam states is true. They thought, oh, all these things about family life being so miserable, oh, it's actually true. Now I understand. That's not the best way to understand. It may be necessary for some. All right, I'll finish there. Obviously, there's many more things could be said, but that's true of every topic. Yeah. Any question, please? Yeah.
Maharaj, I would like to ask you, there is a tendency...
Yeah, just ask it, that's all.
Okay. There is a tendency in the West that the brahmacharis, they have own lands, or they travel freely. Mm. They have
one
income.
You talking about Panchatattva, obviously. Well, in the case of Panchatattva, I mean, this is a political question as much as anything else. But it seems he has his own van and he manages his own income and this and that. But he's doing it all for Krishna's service. He's not using the income for sense gratification. And it appears that, you know, he's not being properly facilitated by the management to do, of course, like I say, it's a political question, that he has, you know, he has a strong desire to travel and preach and distribute books and develop things, but he's not being supported. That's what I know from his side. I don't know from the management side. I don't see it. But it may be, I mean, I know myself, as a brahmachari, I never kept any personal money. I was traveling and preaching here and there, and Prabhavishnu Swami, who was my regional secretary, told me at some point, you should keep some personal money. I never kept any until he told me to. He said, it's just convenient. Otherwise, you know, every time, he said, anyway, you're traveling and preaching, you're responsible, and every time you have to travel, you have to, you know, ask the temple or something like this, just keep some money for yourself. He told me. So if one is a responsible brahmachari, then actually he's living more like a... If he is, then he's living like a sannyasi. Otherwise, it may be that brahmacharis... he's not... Actually, every brahmachari should be under some authority. That's a fact. But... Our society, as you may have noticed, is not, you know, that it's not always that well organized, and things are not very clear. Generally, we have the idea that we think, well, a brahmachari is someone who's a male devotee who's not married. But it's not really like that. A real brahmachari is brahmachari guru kule. Vasandanto guru hitam. Brahmachari means who's under the discipline of his guru. But then a sannyasi, he's also under the discipline of his guru, but he goes out and preaches. So he doesn't generally remain with the guru, but he goes out and fulfills the mission of his guru. He's never separated from the guru by his service attitude. As Prabhupada said, it's not to his disciples, it's not that you should remain students forever. The father looks after the children, but they shouldn't remain children just depending on the father. They should go and do, when they grow up, they should do something to serve their father. Prabhupada gave this example. So it may be that some devotees, they have a spirit to go out and do something which is more developed than those of the leaders. It may be like that. Often we see, and I'm not speaking about Czech Republic now, I'm talking about some general principles, that often we see that the leaders of temples, they're grihasthas, and their main interest is that enough money should come in for their family maintenance. They're not really interested in preaching and saving the conditioned souls, and their focus is somewhere else. So it's not very conducive to be a brahmachari under such a management. So if one has the spirit of selflessly serving Krishna, that spirit will be impeded if one is under a manager whose interest is, they don't want that anyone should have such an attitude because it's a disturbance to their religion. Religion for them means, you know, you have an RT and put out the plate, and then I'm saving up for a new TV. So that's another $100 for that. So these are complex questions. Everything becomes when everyone doesn't have the spirit of selfless service to Krishna, everything becomes very complex. When everyone has the spirit of selfless service to Krishna, everything's very easy. Yeah.
Woman, the fear of Maya, when we often hear we should be fear, be careful of Maya, but when that same thing goes beyond certain extent, then it seems that the enthusiasm goes down and then...
We should be afraid of Maya, but you're saying we shouldn't be so afraid that... We should be afraid of Maya and confident of the protection of Krishna. We shouldn't be so afraid of Maya that we go and live up in the hills and Maya won't come near me. Maya's everywhere. So we shouldn't be so afraid. I can't go out and preach, otherwise, you know, I can't ever see a woman or ever talk to a woman, otherwise I'll fall down. And you're already fallen if you're in that situation. We don't unnecessarily mix with women, but we can. We don't unnecessarily lock ourselves away from society either. So preaching means we preach. We're nirvisheshvadis. One meaning of nirvishesh, it means without distinction. So we preach without distinction. We preach to everyone. So women may come also to Krishna consciousness. Of course, we all, in India, it's somewhat easier in as much as everyone understands the culture that women, unmarried women, they don't mix up, especially with sadhus, very much. So we can... In many places where we have our temples, and we also have senior women devotees, and any young girls come and they're interested, we can just direct them that you take guidance from this senior Mataji devotee, like that. But it's not that a brahmachari, then you can't do anything. I mean, you want to go. You go out and just like you're selling books in the train. So mostly the men will be with they'll be traveling with their families and their wife, and they will show the book, and many times the woman may be interested and not the husband. So what are you going to do? Say, no, I'm not going to speak to you. You speak to me, the husband. But the wife's interested. He isn't. So let her sit. Actually, you often see the man's interested and not the woman. But it may be around the other. That often happens. So, like I said, we shouldn't be. If we're so afraid of Maya that we won't have any interaction in any circumstances with any women, that means that we're not confident of the protection of Krishna. It's a common question that comes up in the West that. It's very difficult for book distributors in the summer when the women walk around showing off a lot of their bodies, and many times they're very shameless actually. You can't imagine living in India what it's like that a young brahmachari comes up, he's dressed in some kami clothes, and he comes and approaches them and they say, hey, great, this young man came up to speak to me, and the only way they know to relate to young men is sexually, and they start, they start reacting, interacting with them like that. And Shalini is shooting out all these Cupid's arrows. They just do with any young man that comes close to them. Especially, you know, the young man, he's very confident and smiling. And he's got some Tej, so he's bright. I said, hey, this is great. So it's difficult for the young men brahmacharis in the summer. That's another reason why I recommend in the West, let them go in monk's clothes. Let them dress as sadhus. And then I remember once I was on an airplane, I was flying from Thailand to Malaysia. I was in kami clothes, because Malaysia is a Muslim country, at least. It's like rules. And it was a Muslim country. It's not like Saudi Arabia, but it's once you're inside the country, you can dress in devotee clothes. So I was just sitting on the plane, and this airline hostess came up to me and started talking, you know, in the wrong kind of way. What are you doing? Where are you going? She asked me a few questions. I just pulled off my cap and said, I'm a Hare Krishna devotee. And she took off. She was showing some interest in me in the wrong way. And as soon as she knew I'm a Hare Krishna, knowing, you know, the interest stopped immediately. So people have, well, she just wasn't interested, but that's another thing. Who is this? Atmatapapu was telling me, this Shobha Day, have you heard of her? She's like a major promoter of women's licentiousness in India. So Amitabh was telling me that she was writing to the women that you should go after the sadhus. They're the best for sex. Something like that. Catch a sadhu. But generally women, they know the sadhu, they know them. Or any man. It's the whole idea is in Indian culture, in Muslim culture, is that you're going to get married and you have your husband and that's it. Now they're promoting something different. In India, they're deliberately promoting sinful life. What was it, 2 years ago they had some film promoting lesbianism. I don't think it caught on. Fortunately, not yet. Prabhupada didn't even know what that was when he went to the West. One of his disciples, female, do you know what lesbianism is? It means samalingata between women, homosexuality between women. So one of his female disciples was saying, he was trying to explain to Prabhupada, I have this problem, he didn't understand. Then this Govinda Dasi mentioning her, she explained, and Prabhupada said, oh really? I mean, we have that in India, among some low-class men, among men, but among women, Prabhupada had never heard of it. It's very common in the West. So degraded. Oh, wait a minute. Not supposed to say that. No, actually lesbianism is very good, homosexuality. Sorry, I didn't mean to say that. Don't put me in prison. You put me in prison and then I don't like to say in front of the deities what might happen there. Because it's all men and they're, you know, they have a lot of energy and they're lusty men, so. Sometimes they do things forcefully. That happened to one of Prabhupada's disciples. He was put in prison and they raped him, homosexual. Hare Krishna. It's a bad world. So, and apart from, you know, your own spiritual life, you can stay a brahmachari to help others. Look at the condition of the world. Now you have an opportunity to do something to help others. Distributing these books. Why are we building a temple here? What's the point? The idea is we want to help others come to Krishna consciousness. It's not just a matter of prestige. We also build a temple. We have important work to do. It's the only important thing in the whole world. Now there's the American the election for the next national president of America. It's coming up in the next soon, and later this year. And for months and months, if you ever look at the newspaper, it's all discussing, it's either going to, who is it going to be, the Democratic nomination, doesn't matter. People are going to hell, whoever becomes president of America, they're not going to stop cow killing, they're not going to stop human killing in Iraq. None of the candidates are talking about ending that war. Human killing, killing the children in the womb, they're not going to stop it. So, we've got more important things to do. They'll have peace talks and this and that. We're distributing books, Prabhupada's books. That's actually doing something to improve, to help people. Otherwise, these people, they can't help.